We can work with more power together than separately. Help us, dearie, and God will reward you. There had been a movement among our fellow prisoners, and they pressed forward and united their prayers with ours. We were apparently well at all of them, and now they shouted in, interrupting each other, "Yes, it's true, they are married. Let them go together." So, cried the red-faced. "Shut up, because here's I talking. You may believe, good friends, that it is not so easy to break a gracious command. When the group will reach its destination, it must hold the real, right number, as it says in the paper, neither too much or too little. And as you want, it would be one too many to Kolyvan, and too little to Omsk. It will not do, you know. I lose my job. Ouch, 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 I lose office." A woman among them who was sentenced to Kolyvan now stepped forward and asked to be allowed to change place with Sonia. "Yeah, see, that was not so bad," said the red-faced, but, as you will front and reads your name and finds out that they got hold of the wrong woman, then it is just me they blame." "No," said Sonia, "we change the name, right?" She turned to the other, who affirmed her question. The red-faced gave a flat laughter. "Looking at so cunning they are women. Ouch, 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 so clever. Yes, then it all goes well then. Then I can decide the matter myself," he added, with a major mien. "The governor do not need to go into such trifles. Join now still little friends. But by all means, remember your new names," he added laughing and threatened finger. "You old drunken gentleman, blessed joy with this way of applying imperial orders. So was Sonia and I joined at the Tobolsk Square, to our fellow prisoners shout. Any other wedding had we not and did not need, either. Happier have no bridegroom embarked his honeymoon than I was, when we again put us in march to Kolyvan. I had been wanting to dance the way forward, such roared the joy inside me." Sonia was calmer, but even she was happy. It was not a rash step she had taken, it had matured in her, this decision, since the day she had stepped down from the ambulance carriage. "And now, we went there hand in hand towards the unknown, with dark fates, but with peace and joy in our hearts. At last we were on target for our walk, but now begun a new chapter in our pain history. We arrived in February. The cold was very severe and we suffered terribly in the ramshackle hut that was assigned to us residents. Our clothes were almost worn out and in otherwise inadequate. A hard work awaited us as well, in any case quite foreign to both of us. I was in the designated place in one of the mines, where I had to stand in the days to its end in the same place, in the dark and damp with some other etch men and turn a windlass for hoisting ore. It was considered the hardest work and therefore were the newcomers there. Food was sent to us once at midday, an inadequate and cold food which it was claimed as a preliminary starvation in order to bring himself to ingest the bad food. How death tired and in despair, was I not in the evenings, when I on the slippery ladders, on painstaking steps up again, walked to my home. But there met me Sonia, always with open arms and a loving smile. And thus she stroked away, for the moment at least, all the bitterness of my soul. What she was strong and what she was good. Her work was also not less heavily and laborious than mine. There was a large common kitchen where all mining prisoners' food was cooked, a horribly filthy hole where rats ran around on the floor as tame pets, and cockroaches hung in large clusters on the walls. Here, Sonia tasked to wash the utensils that came back with leftovers from the mines. A more disgusting place, employment, can hardly be imagined, but she bore her fate with resignation and a fortitude which was admirable. As I often was so dejected by the discouragement that I preferred wanted to die, even for your own hand, it never came a regret over Sonia's lips. She sought to persuade me courage by drawing up plans for the future. Then our prison time had gone to end. She was sentenced to 8 years but was determined to stay the 2 years extra of my sentence that overshot her. Yes, what I'd have done, if I had not had this angel at my side. Unfortunately, however, I would not keep her, but why say sorry, I should not rather rejoice and be thankful that she had been able to quit. After 1.5 years staunchly supported sufferings, she succumbed, maybe more for the immense soul tension and powered stress, than for physical efforts and hardships. It broke out in the summer year after our arrival, a plague, which like a liberation angel went over our penal colony. Sonia was among the lucky ones, whose chains fell off. I sat with her in the end. The beautiful eyes shone with fever glow when she squeezed my hand and whispered, "Be of good cheer, Peter. I believe in a continued existence in which we shall receive for what we here have suffered, and where we shall find each other under brighter conditions, very brighter. Thank you, dearest, for what you have been for me. Never had I been able to bear my fate if I had not had you by my side. And one more thing, Peter, never think that the sacrifice we spent for our beloved fatherland have been in vain. What we suffered in silence, unseen by humans, and it is a seed Russia's sacred soil, it will once again bear fruit to the liberation of our people." She lay there holding my hand in her. I saw how the forces sank. From a movement with her head, I knew it was something she wanted to say further. I leaned my ear against her mouth and captured her last barely audible words, "I am going away now, Peter. May never see my country. But when you once again get to trample on Russian soil, so bend your knees and kiss the ground like a greeting from your Sonia. Alone, alone, what would I do now? This hell in even 8.5 years in such conditions was me not possible. Somehow I have to put an end to my misery. I could throw myself into the mine opening, it would be a safe deliverance, many had done it before me. But it was like I was ashamed for Sonia by that idea. What she would not suffer to see such an act of cowardice, for I felt myself that it was cowardly in this way to escape from life. But to hold out of my captivity until coming back to life, or escaping to a dignified human existence and a useful activity, it would be my rights, and that would Sonia like. However, there was no easy thing, first, to prepare an opportunity to escape and then on untrodden roads, through hardship, which must be horrible. To drag on thousands mil, still in danger of being intercepted, returned, flogged and hanged, it was just not some appealing perspective. So far I have hardly mentioned a word about Sasha. I have gone up in Sonia's and my own destinies, and yet he had always been by my side both during transport and then in work. He was my ever faithful friend and companion accident. Now, I sought his company more than before. But the moment we could talk intimately with each other were few counted. It was not allowed for prisoners at work to talk to each other, much less had we right at free moments to come together and have private discussions. But how severe we were watched, however, could it not be prevented? Two proposed men, who knew how to take each opportunity, to meet and exchange ideas. We started spinning our plans. The goal was to reach Switzerland, the political refugees' promised land. But how? At first, we had to sneak our way along the same major high road as we arrived, but not on the road. It would inevitably lead to our capture. No, we have to make our way to the side of the road, but never completely let go of the direction, as we then could come into the endless wilderness we had to pass. Once received in Russia, we would embark on a more southerly route than the one we have come to the Penza, Tambo and Poltava, and so to seek out Odessa or another port city on the Black Sea, where you could always take the hire of any ship or stay hidden in the load and thus come over to Italy and from there to Switzerland. But one thing was to lay plans, another to bring them into execution. How to get feed meanwhile, since it obviously was connected with great danger to move in the villages or cities, at least while we were going on Siberia's land. For it was a great price, reward promised for those who could catch an escaped prisoner and deliver him into the country police hands. But why do despair? We were now right in the middle of the summer, the forests and the fields were full of berries and edible herbs. It was just to get away before it went too late in the year. But how would the escape done? The first step was always the hardest, then would dangers and difficulties subside in proportion as we got further from our exile. Now was the time to act wisely and expeditiously. The circumstances were now favorable to us. I successfully managed by a farmer, who had been in the city and provided themselves with brandy, stealing a keg when he was at half drunk, lay on the carriage load and let the horse go the same old way without the guidance of reins. This keg was to be our ally. Set it out by the road as the nearest guard had to pass. It succeeded. At midnight, when we crept out, we found the guard in deep sleep beside the trap we had put in his way. With beating heart I crept right next to him, took his hat that had fallen by him, and side gun that he put down, a little short knife, dagger. Who could get us to be useful both as a defense weapon and knife? In exchange, he got my prisoner cap, the only of the incriminating garments we managed to get rid of. And so we began our adventurous journey. That we were able to implement our program seems to me even now as a miracle. But the hardships and dangers it entailed, which suffering it cost, what hunger pangs it meant, I will not even try to depict. It would also spin out my story to a tedious length. Only a few suggestions may here be permitted me. When you are fighting for life and liberty under such difficult circumstances, one is not so scrupulous about the means. In many a lonely landscape hut, where we dared count on our physical strength, if needed, we went boldly into. We began by begging, and if this not helped, we took by force food and clothing. May they forgive us, these out there country dwellers, defenseless inhabitants. I hope we see these people on one or the other level and must there be an opportunity to rediscover these our creditors and repay them many times for what we were compelled to forcibly on. Since in this way we eventually managed to exchange the incriminating prisoner costume against ordinary peasant clothes and even got further from the place of deportation, we dared ourselves into villages, before giving us like to be Siberian peasants seeking work. In a different place we also stayed a few days to help with the corn harvest or autumn ploughing, and could in this way and even make the occasional rubles. Many a time we had to endure a difficult cross-examination before the rural police or village elder, and saved us by allocate the most idiotic stupidity. The dangerous, however, was that we had no pass, but also this difficulty was finally fixed. In the Yekaterinburg, we were arrested by a gendarme and introduced to the police chief to be subjected to interrogation. With trembling hearts we came accompanied by a gendarme into a room in the police office, where currently no one was inside. The police chief had not yet come and we got a long wait, so we had plenty of time to look around. On the table in front of us was an amount of paper, among which my sharp eye noticed some passport forms. It was within reach these long-awaited papers, that for us denoted the greatest security, but how to access them. Then we heard a violent noise in the room outside, it sounded like a real riot with high shouts and clatter of litter-battered chairs. The police rushed out. Instantly I could pick some forms, folded them and put them in the boot shaft. But once it was done I realized the danger I put me through, a body search and I had been lost. The sweat of anxiety deposed large beads on my forehead. He came back and immediately thereafter entered the police boss into the room. He had witnessed the end of the scuffle and was its better so busy in that he devoted us little attention. The assistant reported that we were arrested as passportless, but it did not seem to interest him the boss. Let those nuts go and get me immediately report what passed here beside, he roared in ungracious tone to the gendarme. We were saved. There was no difficulty from a note on the city's town hall door, to quick copy the sign name of Chief Constable's signature in a haste and then ourselves write out passports. Sasha was full of admiration of my cunning and boldness. On himself he said that he had never been able to conceive, let alone carry out, this plan. The dear Sasha. He was more an enthusiast than a practical man, but never had I, but by his assistance, could have implemented my escape. So many times when I was ready to succumb during physical fatigue and mental brokenness, made me Saska's springy temper and endless patience it came to help. He was in fact the driving force of our fraternity. and so devoted and obliging he was. Once, when I was in utter despair, and were fixed determined to no longer continue the hopeless struggle for life, but simply wanted to lie me down and abandon myself to the agonizing death of starvation, then found Sasha his strength to collect some herbs and berries that he forced me to ingest. I felt ashamed of my discouragement, and so we walked on. When we left Yekaterinburg, we came into European Russia. I knelt down and made Sonia's greeting to the native soil. The movement was too much for me. I cried like a baby over this poor country, that had already suffered so much and who certainly still in decades had to bleed and cry before freedom's sun rose over the steppes. But I also remembered Sonia's words, that what we suffered had not been in vain. It will one day bear fruit to the liberation of our people. Thanks to our passes, as were often shown, and was always taken for good, we could now travel far safer. We worked where we could get work, and was thus able to feed us on honest manner, but slow happened this mode of travel. Winter came and the winter passed, and we were not breaking beyond Pensa, but with spring, flowed new vitality into our feet and new encourage poured into our minds. The latter part of our flight went without any major adventure, yes sometimes even under comparatively comfortable conditions. So for example succeeded us that as bargemen, sail a long piece, accompany a barge flotilla on Dnieper. At last we reached Odessa in early August. Our journey had taken an entire year. The clothes hung in rags about your body, your hair lay down on our shoulders, our beard was matted and wild. Although we were not more than, Sasha 27 and I 25, our faces were furrowed, our backs bent, our time lagged, so we looked like old men. For the rubles we succeeded to collect and store, we bought us new clothes, cut hair and beard and then took the lease on our Italian vessel was ready to sail to Genoa. The feelings we experienced when we left the moorings in Odessa harbor and in full sail gliding onto the Black Sea, can be more easily sensed than described. We trod a free country's planks, we were beyond the reach of the Russian police sniffer dogs, we were freemen. The Russian coast sank on the horizon. With cheers, but also with an undertone of deep sadness, we waved the distant blue streak goodbye. Would we well ever again see our fatherland? There was at that time quite a few Russian refugees in Switzerland, where they found not only a secure refuge, but in many cases a real home, with good-hearted people who were interested in the Russian struggle for freedom. Among these were a wealthy philanthropist's landowners near Basel, I want in this story only call him Eberhard, who together with his wife exerted a magnificent charity. They were especially known for to support the poor Russian exiles and tried to help them to some profitable employment. We had heard them spoken of by the Russians, who we had met in Bern, and our goal now was to seek out these noble people and ask for their assistance in the near future. It was a strange feeling of peace that I experienced when I came within their home. We became kindly received and told of our strange destinies, fates. I noticed enough to see how wife Kav many times looked upon us with suspicious glances, apparently wondering how much is well true of those tall stories. But we continued our depiction in a fairly detailed form. The rich man's beautiful, faithful eyes lit, in contrast, of confidence. When we stopped, he took our hands and shook them heartily. "Do you now find refuge in our country?" he said. "You may need to rest and refreshment after such hardships and sufferings. With what can I assist you?" "In the beginning, we would be grateful," I replied, "if we could stop any shorter time on your goods as workers of one kind or another, until we had time to become familiar with the language, then we hope to be better able to help ourselves. I will speak to my manager and probably hopes to arrange this, but you understand that you also have to share my other workers' lot, if you do not find it vulgar." I believe I answered that this lot will be a real paradise for the we left. Thereby it became. We came among the vineyard workers. It was now late in the autumn but the grape harvest was continuing. With an indescribable joy we took hold of this work. We received too soon the testimonials/grade that more diligent workers one had to look for. Then the grape harvest was taken in. We were called into the house. A lord as much praised us for the work we had performed as trustee for the best acknowledged. Even wife Cath now seemed to have given up her suspicions and met us with much kindness. We thanked him for the excellent treatment we received in the beginnings and said goodbye. We intended us to Basel, where we hoped to find some suitable employment. I'm waiting just today a Russian nobleman from Basel, where he was a couple of years living in voluntary exile. Maybe it could be of any use to meet him. Do not you want to stay here for so long? We were obviously very grateful for the friendly proposal, and sat down on the terrace, dressed in our work attire. A carriage drove up in the yard and a man of barely 30 years old, with fine aristocratic move get out. The host goes to meet him and bring him up. We were presented as compatriots who have suffered for Russia's liberation. But what has happened suddenly to Sasha? Before our boss had had time to say our names, he runs up and throws himself on the neck of the newcomer. Alexander, he cries, is it really you? It was a happy reunion and see again of joy, that cannot be described. I was not so familiar with our university partner, but when he heard my name, he reminded himself that I was among the victims of the punishment that was held with due to the demonstrations that followed his expulsion. Our good host and hostess was extremely interested in this unexpected meeting and invited us to be their guests for a few days, to give us time to collate our memories with our friend Alexander, an invitation which we gratefully adopted. Unforgettable days of joy and happiness, the first in nearly 4 years. They laid a balm over the still bleeding wounds. We parted from our new friends, Eberhard and Kath, and followed Alexander to Basel, where he introduced us of many of Russia's freedom aspirations interested people, and where we soon he got a job that left us a scanty salvage. Sasha took a job at a major trade offices and I became an employee of a newspaper with the first task to provide a series of depictions of our captivity and our escape. So we were finally free citizens in a free country, certainly not our own, but a country where, because of the sympathy we got in the beginnings, could feel quite well at. The language, which of course we studied at university, wreaked us now no difficulty. I now make a jump in my story in nearly 10 years that elapsed still and quiet during work and social by most agreeable nature. From my home, I had been told that both my parents were dead. Their estate had shifted between other relatives when I were considered to be missing without a trace. It bothered me very little. I was good now, lived by my pen and had a small intimate circle of friends around me. Often, I was the guest of Eberhard and Kath, which I increasingly learned to hold off. Some Russian refugees along with a few others for our cause interested individuals, had at this time in Basel, a club whose leader was Alexander. Through this club, which stood in connection with like-minded secret clubs in several of Russia's major cities, we stood in a constant touch with our fatherland and followed with keen interest the plans forged. Many a time I felt such a burning desire to return, to again throw me into the secret seething life, especially among the student youth, and it required Alexander's and Sasha's united effort to persuade me to give up what they called a foolhardy undertaking. Years had passed and I was now a middle-aged man in my full labor capacity. I went and longed to do something different than just writing newspaper articles. Then something happened that forever put an end to all hopes of the road. I was brought up often long hikes in Basel's beautiful surroundings and extended them sometime until Eberhard's country house, lying 15 kilometers south of Basel. On a distance of half a kilometer completely close the estate, the railway line runs parallel to and close to the highway. Just as I headed out had reached this point, the train whizzed past in Basel, and immediately afterwards, I see a carriage with horses in full light come rushing against me. The road was just behind me in a sharp bend and the ditch was on the outside of the bend very deeply. Here was a real danger to passengers, whoever they were, and I decided to try to save them. I threw myself in front of the horses and got hold of their bridles, but was pushed over, came under the wagon, got serious crush injuries and lost consciousness. When I regained consciousness/composure, I lay on a stretcher, carried by two men and walked beside the stretcher, Didib Ard and Kath. It was their life I had saved. I felt severe pain in the abdomen and could not move. They brought me up in a guest room and a doctor was sent for. He stated that I had broken a leg and suffered a severe internal injury in the genital area. He looked worried, and I heard how he spoke of the danger of an internal exsanguination, blood loss. In some days I hovered between life and death, but life kept the victory. It was a long and painful convalescence during which I at the tenderest was nursed by my friends, especially by Kath, who then was supported by a nurse from Basel, Sister Ursula. However, it was not easy to take care of me, because the doctor had strictly forbidden me to help myself when I turned or lifted. I had nor made it, for the least I made an attempt, I felt cool interior pains. But Kath and Ursula were tireless in their tender care of me, and Deeb Ard took turns with them for the first time to watch over me. Ursula, the good soul, was a devout Catholic who, since I have become stronger, felt free to come onto the religious issue and did what she could to convert me to the Roman Church. She belonged to a French charity societies, that as well as their loving work operations, even when the opportunity presented itself, and especially the sick beds, did Catholic propaganda. My host people, who themselves belong to the Reformed Church, but otherwise highly esteemed Sister Ursula, who they knew from old, did not like the unsuitable in these experiments, but she was irretrievable in its zeal. She said that when I nevertheless was a Catholic, though the erring Greek Church, it should be easy for me to now turn to the only salvation. I must confess that I had not spent the religious issue any warmer interest, and neither I felt attracted by Sister Ursula's mission, but it had eventually come up in me the conviction that our beliefs about death and afterlife was not real. It was especially Sonia's words on his deathbed, "I believe in continued existence, where we shall receive what we suffered here, and where we shall find each other under brighter conditions," which also gave me a brighter faith. Perhaps we also there find the solution to mortality's obscure riddles. Maybe we get a satisfactory answer to the question, of why do we have to suffer so much down here? These and similar thoughts occupied me a lot during the long time I was tied, first to the bed and then to a wheelchair. I spoke with Deeb Ard and Kath about my thoughts and found any one willing audience. Kath, however, were afraid of these new ideas. She held to the Reformed Church learning, and considered any deviation in freer direction for sin. Our debates on these issues were, however, marked by much deference, which helped to make them instructive and agreeable to us all three. Ursula was happy when we were talking about these topics. One day Deeb Ard came home from the city and brought a newly published book that reignited on our concerns. It was an Alan Kardec book, The Spirit's Book, that he had seen in the bookstore, and just discussed the topics we had begun to concern ourselves with. It was a very eager student reading. We read it loud together and discussed the content. Both Deeb Ard and I felt immediately convinced of the truth of what we read. Kath always had her objections, but must for each time finally allow the existence of a logical probability for the simple teachings that this book appeared. It was an indescribably rewarding and enjoyable time we in this way we spent together. That which to me looked like a terrible accident, had in fact spread a new line of thoughts, and new studies are very important for my development. One night as I lay awake thinking about the possibility of a connection between mind and the spirit world, I suddenly saw a figure standing at the foot of the bed. My first impression was amazement and consternation. How much I longed myself to experience something on this mysterious area. I was afraid, however, when it came so naturally to me. I was close to scream, but controlled myself and stared in full of amazement at the wonderful revelation. It was a female guise, completely wrapped in white, but her features during the thin veil, I could not discern. She was so bright that she completely dispelled the darkness of room. Who are you? I ventured forward to whisper. Then she lifted the veil slowly, and Sonia's beautiful eyes beamed to meet me. My love! I exclaimed, stretching out arms to her.